Hello, everyone. This is Echo, Part 3, Chapter 14. The next day, Ivy set out to conquer one of the obstacles standing in the way of her family's future. "I want to go back to the Yamamoto's," she told Mama. All morning, she had thought of what to say and when, so Mama would allow it. They had finished lunch, and Mama was putting on her jacket to go make bandages with the Red Cross ladies. "We were just there yesterday." "Yes, but I want to plant the irises and rake the flower beds and also fix the vegetable garden for when Kenny Yamamoto comes. I've helped you before. I know what to do. Papa said if Kenny Yamamoto likes how he is caring for the property, then he will sign the agreement. And you said it would be sad for him to come home to his house the way it is. Also, I was thinking that when the oranges and vegetables are ripe, I could sell them at Mrs. Yamamoto's stand and buy war stamps with the money. Maybe Susan could help me. Fernando says the sooner we stop the Nazis, the sooner the war will be over. I can tell Kenny Yamamoto I plan to exchange the stamps for war bonds and give them to his father when the war is over." Mama looked at Ivy with awe. "What a generous and sensible idea. Since we arrived here, Ivy, I grow more and more proud of you. You are becoming such a mature, responsible girl, with your feet on the ground. Papa is working in the grove on the north of the house this afternoon if you need him. The extra key to the shed is in the drawer by the back door. Don't stay too late, and take your jacket." Excited and relieved, Ivy stuffed the extra key to the shed in the pocket of her dungarees and ran to the Yamamoto's. She gathered a trowel, a small rake, and some packets of seeds from the shed. She weeded the flower beds in front of the house and dug small holes for the iris bottoms, dropping them in and leaving just the tips to peek from the ground. She smoothed the dirt around them for their long nap in the earth. As she worked, she found herself looking up at the house and wondering about the closet. She tried to push away her curiosity. She walked to the garden, removing the wire trellises and setting them aside. She pulled up the old tomato plants and hoed the dirt into two long furrows. In one row, she planted carrot seeds. In another, radishes. The rest of the garden would have to wait for warmer weather. In the shed, Ivy lined up the little clay pots beneath the window and planted sweet pea seeds, sprinkling them with water from a tiny watering can. As she walked back to the front yard, she looked toward the road and saw the boy on the bicycle, the one she'd seen while waiting for the bus at school. He was hunched over the handlebars, pedaling as fast as he could down the road. Ivy waved, but he didn't wave back. Where was he going? Why was he always in such a hurry? Ivy was glad she wasn't in a hurry. She slowly swept the front porch and then sat on the steps, satisfied with her work. There was something comforting about being at the foot of the sleeping house, smelling the freshly turned earth and looking at the snug beds of irises waiting to rise. Ivy lifted the harmonica and played "Angels We Have Heard on High." She closed her eyes. When she reached the refrain, she imagined a field of angels who had been sleeping in a faraway and ancient place. Purple angels with yellow tongues, bursting through the topsoil, singing, "Gloria in excelsis Deo." The song filled her with contentment and a sense that everything might, once and for all, be better. Chapter 15. On Saturday, Ivy was so excited to meet Susan and tell her everything that had happened, almost everything, that she was much too early. She sat in the old wagon playing Auld Lang Syne on the harmonica, the song her class would have played on the Colgate Family Hour. Last night, on the radio, she'd heard Guy Lombardo's orchestra play it and people singing. She couldn't remember all the words, except that it kept asking the question, should old acquaintance be forgot? It had been over 3 weeks since she had moved, and Ivy had written to Araceli 4 times, but she hadn't received one letter in return. Mama said mail was slow during the holidays. Papa said Araceli's family could have moved from La Colonia, too. If that was the case, why hadn't she sent a new address? Had Araceli forgotten her? Ivy was happy to have her thoughts interrupted by Susan, who ran through the grove, carrying papers and calling her name. She climbed into the wagon and sat next to Ivy. "Happy New Year!" "And to you, too." They hugged and filled each other in on their Christmas presents and how they'd spent their vacation. Ivy explained about fixing up the Yamamoto's yard and planting the war garden. Kenny Yamamoto is coming home next weekend. If he likes Papa and how he is caring for the house and farm, they will both sign papers that say we can stay here forever. "You mean you might have to leave if Kenny Yamamoto doesn't like how your father is doing things?" Ivy nodded. "That's why I'm making everything look nice. And," she grinned, "I'm going to sell oranges and vegetables at Mrs. Yamamoto's stand and buy war bonds with the money. Do you want to join me? We'll be helping America." "Oh, I want to. And I don't want you to ever leave. But I'm not sure if my parents would let me. You know, because it's the Yamamoto's property." "Don't worry," said Ivy. "You can tell your father that my mother and I inspected the entire inside of the house. I didn't see any secret documents or anything that could help Japan win the war." It wasn't a lie, but the hidden closet still nagged at her. Susan chewed on her lip, thinking, "If it's for the war and our soldiers, maybe they'll say yes." She smiled. "Our own stand. Our very own stand. But first," she held up the papers, "worksheets. I need to catch up in math, or my mom won't let me do any extra activities, even orchestra." The air warmed. Ivy took off Fernando's jacket, spread it out in the wagon, and sat on it. She let Susan wear the purple hat as they huddled over Susan's homework. Afterwards, Ivy pulled out her harmonica and played Auld Lang Syne. "I wish I knew what the words mean," she said when she finished. "My dad told me it means times gone by. He said it's about good memories with old friends, and that even if you're separated for a really, really long time, or never see them again, you can still think about them with love and good feeling." Ivy tilted her head. Mr. Ward had said that? It didn't seem as if he wanted anyone in his family to remember the Yamamotos that way. Had the war squashed all the good memories from his heart? The bell clanged in the distance. Susan gathered her things, handed Ivy the hat, and gave her a hug. "I'll tell my parents all about the orange and vegetable stand tonight, and that you inspected the house, and the Yamamotos aren't spies, so it's perfectly safe. Fingers crossed they say it's okay." Ivy waved. Before Susan disappeared among the trees, she turned and held a hand in the air, fingers crossed. Ivy did the same. Chapter 16. "Do you think he will sign?" asked Ivy as she followed Papa up and down row after row of orange trees. He was marking each trunk with different colored strips of cloth, yellow if they needed to be pruned, green if they needed to be treated for leaf curl, red if they should be removed altogether.
"We will find out 1 week from today, Sunday," said Papa. "He has only a 3-day leave. First, he will travel to the camp in Arizona to meet with his father. Then he will take the bus here to meet with me. He will arrive in the morning, spend a few hours, and I will take him back to the bus in the afternoon." Papa and Ivy got in the truck and drove to the outer groves, where Papa studied the irrigation pumps and the moats and pipes leading to the fields. He pulled oranges from trees, peeled them, and ate a bite, then handed the rest to Ivy to sample, while he made notes about their sweetness or juiciness.
"They will be ready to harvest in a few months or so."
"Then I can sell them." She was excited to start and hoped Susan's parents had said she could help. Ivy looked around at the acres and acres of trees. "Who will help when it's time to pick?"
"That is a problem. I will talk with Kenneth about this. I know one farmer in San Bernardino who might loan me some workers. So many men are at war. So many women work in the factories. There are not enough people to harvest." "The United States is begging for braceros from Mexico because there are not enough strong arms left in the United States."
But if they had not put Mr. Yamamoto and all his Japanese workers in the camp...
Yes, Ivy, you are thinking the same as me. Then we would not be begging for braceros.
They climbed back into the truck, and it rambled through the groves to the road. Papa, can you drop me at the Yamamoto's so I can water the garden? And I can show you the radishes. They are already up. Papa turned the truck at the stand and headed down the drive. Closer to the house, he leaned forward, peering out the dusty windshield.
What is it? She asked.
He turned off the motor, reached for Ivy's hand, and helped her across the seat.
I'm not sure. Stay close to me.
They took a few steps toward the house, and Ivy sucked in her breath. The front flower beds had been trampled, the irises pulled from the ground and thrown at the house, leaving splats of dirt. The porch was now littered with dirt clods and would-be irises. Ivy blinked, making sure it was real. She pulled her hand from Papa's and ran to the side of the house. Someone had rampaged her war garden with a shovel. The radish sprouts had been chopped and scattered in clumps across the yard. The furrows had been flattened. She felt her throat tighten.
Papa, all my work!
He came up behind her and put a hand on her shoulder.
Ivy Maria, I am so sorry.
She ran to the shed. The window was broken, the seedlings no longer on the sill. Papa unlocked the door. Inside, the clay pots lay shattered on the ground, among shards of glass. Ivy felt as though someone had punched her in the stomach. All her hard work had been ruined. As Papa herded her toward the truck, she saw what had been scrawled in red on the newly painted back door.
Jap spies, don't come back!
Who would do such a thing? Mr. Ward?
I don't want you coming here alone anymore, said Papa. For your safety, Ivy Maria.
But I have to clean it all up for Kenny.
If he saw this destruction, surely he wouldn't sign the papers with Papa.
No, Ivy, not today. We will wait until right before Kenneth Yamamoto arrives, so whoever did this does not have time to do it again.
But the seedlings, the radishes.
I know, said Papa. I will explain everything to him.
Something big and fierce rose up inside Ivy.
What is wrong with people, Papa? Why is someone doing this? And why doesn't anyone stop them?
Their hearts hurt. People who used to be friends are no longer friends. Neighbors are not neighbors.
During a war, people feel they must blame and take sides. Hearts grow smaller.
Mama says hearts are bigger than we think.
Angry tears streamed down her cheeks. Papa put his arm around her.
Ivy Maria, how did you get so wise so quickly?
Where is that girl with her head in the clouds? I think I miss her a little. He squeezed her shoulder.
Can you play me something on the harmonica? That song you were going to play on the radio, perhaps? Your solo.
He reached into the pocket, pulled out some coins, sorted through them, and handed her a penny. She took the penny and hugged Papa. As they walked to the truck and all the way home, Ivy struggled to catch her breath, still choked by indignation, as she played a halting America the Beautiful.